All right, you're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On today's show, Tyler Cord, chef owner of Number 7 Sub here in New York City and author of a super upsetting cookbook about sandwiches. As someone who's sandwich obsessed, I was very excited to speak to Tyler, but kind of surprised to learn that we have some differences when it comes to sandwiches. There's some disagreements. I don't know. Perhaps it made for a more interesting conversation. Tyler is a wonderful chef, great guy, and a spectacular writer. I highly urge you to pick up his cookbook. It's out now, and not a bad talker either. All right, let's do this. What'd you have for lunch today?
You know, it's Wednesday, which means it's tomato rice day at the Academy Diner by my apartment. And I went in for that today because that's what I do on Wednesdays. And they told me it was summer, and thus they are only doing two soups every day. And the one that got cut inexplicably is tomato rice. So I had chicken noodle, and it was not great.
Ooh. So are you expected to always order sandwiches? And people are like, wait, why aren't you ordering a sandwich?
I'm dreading the day I go into DeFonte's and they finally have figured out that I own a sandwich shop and like occasionally write about sandwiches. I feel like they're going to be weird with me then. So no, I don't tell any, you know, I don't like go in and say, hey guys, I'll have a sandwich. I'm Tyler Cord. I write about
sandwiches. Let me tell you how I'd like it. If you could just go a little less on the prosciutto and more, yeah.
Yeah. And like the bodega guy by my house, when he finds out, I feel like that's going to be a problem. Just because he's going to be so, he already likes to talk to me a lot, which is fine, but he's going to want to talk about the craft of sandwiches. And I,
well, do you get like an egg and cheese from him, or what do you? How do you interact with him? When you order? What do you order?
I go in and I get egg and cheese in the morning sometimes.
That's kind of like this iconic New York sandwich. Anyone who lives in New York, like, oh yeah, and I had an egg and cheese this morning. I was a little hungover. I don't know if people outside of New York get the whole egg and cheese thing. And can you explain to me in sandwich terms, like what makes a quintessential egg and cheese sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about the egg and cheese sandwich thing. I moved here in 2000, and I...
From?
Ithaca, New York. But I had come right from college in Ohio. But I was interning at Knitting Factory Records, their record label, and I would walk from the train through Tribeca to the office, which was right above the Knitting Factory, and there was a bodega there that had a big sign that said, ham, egg, and cheese sandwiches, you know, it was probably like $1.50 back then.
Yeah.
Maybe that was even 99. Anyway, and I thought, that sounds wonderful. I will have that. And so I went in and I got one, and I then proceeded to get one every morning that I worked there. And then I've always gotten them. But I kind of just assumed, all right, I guess this is a New York City thing, because like every bodega, it turns out, has them. They're cheap. They're delicious. And then at some point, I was helping a friend with a bar in Oakland, and we were talking about sandwiches, and he was like, oh, we can get the bread from this place. We can get the bread from this place. And I was like, no, let's make exciting things to go in the sandwiches, but the bread should be just like straight up like a bodega roll. And he was like, oh, what do you mean? Yeah. And I was like, oh, no, you know, like the bread that your ham, egg, and cheese goes on. And
like,
he was
what
like,
do you mean?
we don't do that.
So the roll is kind of like a Kaiser roll. It's like a round
roll. Yeah, it's what I call like bodega bread.
It's kind of a hard top with little crescents in it, but then the inside gets that almost a cottony mushiness when the hot stuff goes in it.
Indeed. And there's also always the fun game, which is that like, as much as I love eggs, the egg can be a little overwhelming in an egg and cheese, especially because they always like make a big rectangle of it and fold it up.
Yeah.
And it's always a question, do you want to eat that really dense egg part first or last? Because it is also the home of the most American cheese in that sandwich. Like if you go for the outside,
it has to be American.
Like it has to be, or else
anyone
it's not
who
a,
gets like a an egg and Swiss cheese. Just like leave New York City. Yes, you don't specify the cheese because it achieves that weird liquidy.
I guess you could, but that
steak
would be a different sandwich.
No,
and that's
no
not what we're talking
because
about.
Because it all sort of melds together: the cheese, the cottony moistness of the interior of the roll, ketchup or hot sauce.
I don't mind like a whisper of ketchup is nice, but I feel like it fundamentally changes and tweaks it. It's like when you dump the sriracha and the hoisin in your pho, like it's just like it's still good,
yeah,
but you'd like miss out on what it. But again, I'm also a weirdo because I'm the ham, egg, and cheese guy, which is probably, yeah. I'm probably like the
2%. You're like the 1%. the different kind of 1%.
I will have my fancy boar's head ham, please. None of this plebeian bacon.
Okay, so you got a book out, a super upsetting cookbook about sandwiches, which I think, I don't know, I think it's like the best cookbook I've seen, and I can't remember how long. I just emailed your editor, Francis Lamb, who's also a great writer himself, to say it's the best written, funniest cookbook ever written. When did you realize that you were a talented writer? Have you always been writing?
I don't know that I'm that talented a writer. I had a great editor, and he.
But it's a pretty like ballsy
sculpted.
It's a very irreverent.
Crazy.
You're just like, yeah. Fuck it. I'm just going for it. I'm just going to write. Or I'm going to write what I want to write. What was the elevator pitch, as they say?
I mean, I pitched this. You know, I was like, I want to write this crazy, upsetting, distracting, all over the place cookbook that's kind of hard to follow and read.
Yeah, they're like, no, thank you.
Right, they were like, oh, well, okay, sure, this is funny, but like, what if we just did the number 7 sub cookbook and do, you know, 100 of your favorite sandwiches that you guys have served over the years? But the intention was always like, we don't need more just cookbooks, and we definitely don't need more the kind of breathless, like, this is the culture of my restaurant, and this is what we make for family meal, and this is, you know, what our plates look like. Like, we don't need that stuff anymore, necessarily, or at least not from me.
Did Francis get it out of the gate? He's like, oh, totally.
Well, yeah. So everybody turned me down. And then I like a year after we had pitched it to everybody and they'd all turned it down, I heard that Francis got a job at Clarkson Potter. And I kind of knew, I didn't know him super well, but I talked to my agent and I was like, can we pitch it to Francis? I think he might like this. And Francis was like, yeah, let's just do it.
Let's
great.
Let's do it. That's awesome. All right. So I'm gonna read something from your book, if you want, to give the listener an example, if you have not picked up the book yet, and yeah, there's a lot of interesting names for your sandwiches, and you just kind of, each one has an introduction, and you just kind of go into it. This is called the Suzanne Sugar Baker. Chicken fried steak is made from beef. It's beef! I realize that you already knew that, but you'd be amazed by how many people order it and say, I ordered the chicken. This doesn't look like chicken. But I don't laugh at them because it is a little confusing, just like when everybody makes fun of the insane clown posse for not knowing how magnets work, because I don't actually know how magnets work. There are a lot of reasons to make fun of the insane clown posse, but their honesty and self-understanding about what is beyond their mental grasp is frankly great, and I wish we all had the courage to admit what we don't understand. Also, pickled peaches and fried things go so well together that dogs can hear your pleasure at an octave we can't even perceive. Miracles! And this isn't chicken fried steak anyway. It's mushrooms. So, you got the, like, what is that, a Soylent Green reference in the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you've got an insane clown posse reference in there. You got dog frequency, and you're not even talking about chicken fried steak. You're talking about mushrooms.
Yeah.
So,
are you sure I'm still such a great writer?
Well, no, it's fun to read. Like, when, like, there are so few books where the introductions to recipes and stuff are fun to read. Like, I mean, one which I imagine maybe you probably get comparisons to is Brooks Headley's Fancy Desserts books. And Brooks is a great writer also, in a sort of very sort of doing his own thing sort of way.
Yeah.
I think April Bloomfield and her writing partner JJ do a very good job at writing about things in the way, in her own voice, in a very sort of British-y sort of conversational way.
Yeah.
But it's just not often you find stuff where you actually want to read it.
But it's that kind of Fergus Henderson, like when I first read that Nose Tail cookbook, I was like, this dude is just, I had never read a cookbook that was so like, you know, he writes about like, you know, take a pig's leg and salt it and hang it up in the closet for a few months and it might get a little moldy. And if it does, that sucks. Like, don't eat it. But then try it again if that happens, because this is going to be really great and you're going to love it. And I remember reading that and being like, this is, someday I want to write a book like that. Yeah. It was just like so incredibly, like I was in this guy's, I was just in a room with this guy having a conversation about ham, and he was like, yeah, this is how you do it. And that was a big conversation actually with Francis about how detailed to get in the recipes, because originally I was writing very much like that. And he was like, you know, we need to be more specific about amounts of things, and it makes it much easier for people to actually do the recipes if it's more specific. We talked a lot about that. But anyway, the tone, I like that kind of conversational.
But that's interesting. So you decided to be like, listen, I'm just going to do what I want to do introduction-wise, head note-wise, as we call it in the biz, But then the recipes themselves will be a little bit more straight ahead and actually give you precise measurements.
I wanted people to actually be able to make this food if they could sift through all the crazy. Because I still tried to fill the instructions with crazy, and the index has a bunch of crazy stuff. Like, I tried to make the whole thing as crazy as I possibly could, but I wanted the recipe to be functional. And
I know there are a ton of sandwiches in here, no offense, that I'm just never, ever going to make, but I still want to read about them. It's also a very cool-looking book. Can you talk about the look of it and how that came about?
There were two people, Michael Nagin and Ian Digman, who we talked a lot about what it was going to look like, and I, much like my restaurant number 7 and the sandwiches that we serve at the sandwich shop, like, I like the notion of something that looks very classic and simple and maybe a little austere almost, and then it's full of craziness, you know? So, like, the sandwiches at the shop we wrap in white butcher paper, and they just look like a sandwich that you got at a bodega or wherever.
You think you're getting a regular hero, and then crazy things, and all of a sudden there's roasted broccoli in there.
Right,
and you're like, what the hell?
We talked about it, and we talked about Julia Child and my old, like, Craig Claiborne New York Times cookbook and things like that. It was, you know, let's make this look really straightforward and perfect, and then, you know, it's obviously completely flawed and crazy on the inside. And a little bit on the cover. And then, obviously, the William Wegman stuff played very much into that, because then his idea from the get-go was to take these kind of 70s cookbooks. He was interested in this time period of cookbooks when it wasn't about making the food look really glossy and juicy and perfectly edible, and it was more about kind of, there was more artistic style in it back then, I think he's of the mind that it was the case. So he took these kind of 70s cookbooks and cut out images and painted around them.
All right. In the book, you write in the intro, at my restaurants, I will never offer you a BLT because you can either do that at home or go to a restaurant where they don't care about being awesome. I will never make you a ham and Swiss sandwich unless, of course, that's what you really, really want, and then I'll make it for you. But I would much rather make you roasted cauliflower and smoked fresh dressing, or meatloaf with pickled shrimp, or fried zucchini with onion puree. All that said, how do you make a perfect BLT?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever actually made a BLT. I'm sure I've made a BLT in my life, right? But I actually had a BLT with my lunch today, and it was delicious, actually.
Wait, what do you mean you had a BLT with your lunch?
I had a cup of soup and a BLT. I mean,
I think you had a BLT and you had a cup of soup with it.
No. I went there for the tomato rice soup.
Yeah.
They didn't have it. I then decided
so you got
to
have a BLT on the side.
Yeah, basically.
How was it?
It was good.
Did you have, like, bad underripe diner tomatoes, or
for sure. But that's, you know, that's part of a BLT. I don't know if you use real tomatoes, I feel like that's a tomato sandwich with bacon on it. If you get a BLT, it's supposed to have those cardboard tomatoes on it, right? Or no, I don't know. I don't really make BLTs very often, but
all right. So let's start. So you do very non-conventional, like, sandwiches at number 7, but they work. There's my feeling is, I assume there's kind of a formula that in your head when you're thinking about acid and texture and this and that. Like, how do you go about building a sandwich?
I mean, they're often based on, not always, but a lot of the time they're based on existing kind of sandwich formulas.
Like, can you give me an example of ones you've riffed on?
Well, like it's probably one of our bestsellers. It might be our bestseller, but the zucchini parm is an eggplant parm, but instead of eggplant, it's fried zucchini, and instead of a tomato sauce, we make an onion puree, but that's a little sweet and not super tart, so we pickle jalapenos to kind of balance and make it achieve the same kind of level of acidity and sweetness of
a tomato sauce.
Anyway, so we just kind of swapped all the ingredients out for the other things, and then I put potato chips on it because I like potato chips on sandwiches. But that is, like, kind of maintaining the essential formula of an eggplant or chicken parm sandwich.
Take something that works and do your own riff on it.
But then if it's not, like, the broccoli classic, which is, you know, roasted broccoli and pickled lychees and fried shallots and feta cheese and mayonnaise, that's more just thinking about the balance of, you know, like, roasted, awesome, hearty goodness with something a little sweet and a little sour and crunchy.
If you have something roasted, you want something a little sweet. And if you have something a little sweet, then you need some sour to balance the sweetness.
Yeah.
And then you want some crunchy because crunchy is always good.
Right. Those things are always good together. So
did you have any idea how well, like, the broccoli sandwich would do when you put it on the menu?
No. I mean, like, I don't know. I hoped.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. But it's done great. It's funny, too, that, like, our biggest sellers in general are vegetarian, but it's not, you know, It's not, we're not a vegetarian sandwich shop, and I don't think it's vegetarians coming to eat those. I think people just.
I mean, I'm not vegetarian, but I love the broccoli one, and I also I think we're in a really cool place food wise right now, where I don't know, like it's. I think that sort of stigma or whatever of vegetarian or that labeling,
yeah,
is finally sort of fading away. That good food is good food, whether it has meat or not is not something like, oh yeah, I don't think about it. It's just,
we still don't label the menu like these are the vegetarian sandwiches and these are the meat ones. And I suspect though, if we did do that, we would sell a lot less vegetarian sandwiches. I think when people aren't thinking about it, they're just like, oh yeah, that sounds like great food, I'll eat that. But I bet if you put it in front of them, if you like force them to make the decision between eating meat and not eating meat, that might change things. I could be wrong about that.
What do you do hero role? Because I'm always curious about roles and the role that bread plays in a sandwich, and how is it interesting, but not go to the point where it dominates a sandwich, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because everybody, not everybody, but I feel like you read the like the most important part of a sandwich is the bread thing all the time, which is not necessarily untrue. I don't totally agree with it. I mean, it's important that the bread... Maybe the most important thing about the bread is that it doesn't get in the way of your sandwich.
Yeah, you don't want the bread to screw it up.
Right. But unless it's like the most awesome bread ever, and then what are you doing? Just put some butter on there and eat it, right? Like if you got this like really special, awesomely fermented...
Well, it's interesting. Like over here at Arcade Bakery, which it's in a hallway of kind of a 1930s-era office building, and he built this little French bakery kind of like wedged into the wall there. And my favorite sandwich in New York right now, no offense, is his ham and cheese, because he makes these just beautiful baguettes, and they crackle when you bite into
them. Yeah, that's the thing.
If
you have that baguette, like I just want some prosciutto or
so he just does
butter,
good French butter on it, a few slices of ham. So it's not all like, I think Americans are guilty of just putting way too much meat on their sandwiches. Like I don't need an
overstuffed. It's a different kind of sandwich.
Yeah, but we can get to like pastrami and stuff, but just a few slices of that. A couple of planks of like Swiss cheese, like, you know, whatever, Gruyere or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's it. So really good butter, really good thinly shaved like French ham, couple of planks of cheese, top. That's it.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
So good.
And so going back to my intro, like I'm not going to make you a ham and cheese because I'm not going to spend hours and hours baking bread like that because I'm not good at that. But like he's serving a ham and cheese, and I guess I'm not knocking ham and cheese because that sounds like the greatest sandwich
this
of all
time.
This
is like the platonic ideal of ham and cheese.
But also because it's the same thing. It's like he's essentially saying to you, I'm not going to serve you something that I just like bought some ingredients and put them together and hand it to you, like, because that's lame and boring. I'm going to slave over this incredible baguette and I'm going to make that. And then all that needs is a little ham and cheese.
Exactly.
And here you go.
Like an accent.
But either way, it's still like a ton of – you can spend several days making the perfect ham and cheese. Anyway, bread can be the most important part of a sandwich. But I think just when we're talking about sandwiches in general, and we're mostly talking – and most of what my book is talking about is the kind of the American notion of a sandwich, which is just a bunch of stuff stuffed in bread. I wouldn't say that it's the most important thing.
Would you say it approaches kind of like po'boy bread down in New
Orleans? Sure, sure, sure.
And sort of, it's kind of pliant.
It's
not
light.
Gonna, yes.
It's not super complex. It's not particularly complex in its flavor. It's got a really nice light – kind of crust to it, but that's just barely there. If you toast it, you can tell it's there much more. And if you don't, it's just like this really pleasant, tender, awesome thing.
Okay, does this drive you crazy? When someone makes you a sandwich and it's like, say, it's like a ham and cheese sort of sandwich, but they pile the meat too much in the middle of the sandwich. So when you slice it, it's kind of bulbous in the middle, and then it tapers off towards the end. And they don't displace the meat correctly, evenly across the bread.
Well, I'll say...
Am I insane? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. And
that drives me crazy.
You know who Dan Pashman is?
Yeah.
The Sporkful guy?
We've had
He's
Dan
like
on.
He's really obsessed with the idea that every bite of every single thing that you eat has to be uniform. You know, at the same time, I do think that there is something to be said for the different experiences. Like, for instance, like a ham and cheese sandwich on a really great baguette has just that one thin strip of like dark, dark, dark at the very... Like the middle of the bottom is like... always is just a tiny bit darker than the rest of the loaf. And so your bites, like personally, I eat around that and save that for the end because that's my favorite part. But I don't want every bite to be the same because it's boring at that point.
Do you ever make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Not very often, but some kid wanted peanut butter at brunch the other day at the restaurant. And I sent somebody to go buy a jar of peanut butter and we made them a peanut butter sandwich. And then one of my line cooks grilled a piece of bread and smeared some peanut butter on it and handed it to me, and I was like, oh my God, why don't I eat this all the time? So then until that jar was empty, I had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day at work for lunch.
So would you ever consider, like, in terms of being inspired, would you ever think, like, oh, you know what? We should incorporate peanut butter into a sandwich like that they do, like, in Asia with the satay, and, like, you have a peanut butter with
meat
and stuff.
I mean, we've done things with, like, that in the past. It's been a long time. I really like, for sandwiches, it usually ends up being, like, some kind of peanutty sauce and, like, mint jelly. I think there's a peanut butter and jelly, but it's not peanut butter and jelly, but it's
of
like,
course not. No.
There's a meatloaf sandwich in there that's like a peanutty something and mint jelly, or there's crushed peanuts and meat jelly. Anyway, but yeah, I like the notion of, particularly, I don't know why mint jelly like frees my mind to think about going in other directions, but it's still really sweet and still makes good PB&J.
Do you have any, you have a grilled cheese technique?
No, I'm not that into grilled cheese, and I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I feel like everybody, that bums everybody
out. I feel like this is going to be a great first date, and this is so not turning out to be a great first date. I just like, oh, man. I feel like, because I think.
Do you want me to go?
I know, but I think, like, grilled cheese is interesting. And there is that, I think, what is a very good scene in that movie Chef, which, you know, it's not the best movie ever, but they did their food scenes very lovingly, and it's an enjoyable film with Jon Favreau and the rest of the gang. And he has a scene where he's making this grilled cheese. And it's interesting. I think to do a grilled cheese well, it does take a lot of time, because if you have a fair amount of cheese in there, you've got to cook it long enough for the cheese to melt. But if you cook it long enough, that means you have to have it on a pretty low heat. So
and you
the,
want it
the
to
butter
melt.
Doesn't burn.
You want it to melt. You want the cheese to melt to the point that it comes out of said grilled cheese and ends up on the pan a little bit, right?
Yes, oozes a little bit. So it's got it takes a lot of patience.
But I want it to, like, caramelize on the pan. Like, I want bits of it to go through.
Bits,
especially because, like, if we're using bread with holes in it, I want that to go melt enough that it goes through some of the holes and like griddles on the pan.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you have children?
I do not know.
Well, you will be making grilled cheese. you just wait, young man.
Sure.
You went to culinary school?
I did.
Interesting. Where?
It was the French Culinary Institute, but now it's the International Culinary Center.
Why?
Well, I wanted to write about food, and I wanted to write when I moved to New York in 1999, 2000, and I couldn't figure that out, and I kept.
But you were just out of college at that point.
I was just out of college, and I kept taking these jobs. The only jobs that were available were always on the web internet side of things, and those were the departments.
Even
that
back
kept,
then,
well, that was like the end of it. Like, that they were all hiring, and then they would all lay me off like a week later. So I worked for the Village Voices website for a little while, and then the New York Times laid off their whole website, and then I lost my job because they hired all the New York Times guys. And then I worked at, like, the Book of the Month Club, and I just kept getting these weird internet jobs. But they were, like, you know, copy editing and stuff, and I wanted to write, and I seemed to be totally unemployable for some reason. So I decided that if I went to culinary school, that I would be able to write about food, because I would have a literary background and a food background. And then I went to culinary school, realized that I loved cooking, and then decided not to stop and write. I didn't want to work in an office anymore, after all, it turned out. So I just kept cooking. But
and then when did the number seven idea come up?
Number seven came up. I wasn't one of those cooks that bounced around a lot. Like, I took a job and I stuck with it for several years. So I graduated from what was then the FCI, and I stayed and I worked at their restaurant, Le Cole, for 3 or 4 years.
There on the corner in Soho.
Right there on the corner, yeah. Because the night students get there after work at like 6, and they prep, and then at 8 they start serving the restaurant. So me and a few other people made the food from 5 when the restaurant opened at 5 to 8 until, you know, when they took over. So I did that for like 4 years, and then I went and worked for Jean George at Perry Street for a few years.
Were you writing at all back then in any capacity?
No.
So you're just cooking. Okay.
But then so then, you know, I'd been cooking for 7 or 8 years, and it was the time when it was like, I could either be I was ready to, like, to be a chef. And so I could either do that for Jean George, but that would have meant leaving town, because there was nothing available at any of the New York restaurants. But
have had to go to the Ocean Club in the Bahamas or something.
Which, you know, I thought about. So it was either something like that or do it for myself and stay in New York. So I decided I would make the foolish decision of doing it for myself and staying here. And I had a buddy who'd been building bars and restaurants, and I called him, and I asked him how to do it, and he was like, well, I'll just do it with you. Let's just build something. He had just built that bar Weather up in Brooklyn.
Okay, you know, sure. Weather. Yeah, beautiful place. I mean, I always tell my wife that I want to quit my job and open a sandwich shop, and this does not amuse her.
Don't do it.
But
in New York City, maybe in the Bahamas.
So that's what I don't understand. Like, so where did you get the idea that, I can open a sandwich shop in the most expensive city in America where rent is just, you know, gazillion dollars
a square
foot? It
seemed like such a good idea.
And make a living doing that.
Where were you to tell me not to do it? The restaurant had been open, I think, just under a year, and some of the Ace Hotel guys had been by, and we served sandwiches at the bar, and they liked it a lot, and they were like, well, we have this space where we can't have a hood, it can't be vented, so you can't have like gas cooking equipment, and you can't really have a grease trap, so you can't really, we want to do food in the space, but you can't really cook there, so would you be interested in a sandwich shop? And I, having been in New York for however many years at that point, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, 10 years, I felt confident that nobody in the city understood what a proper sandwich was, because it was just bodega sandwiches, which I love, yeah. But it's just like Boar's Head on cheapo bread. Again, and not knocking it. I eat it all the time.
But it's interesting. But in New York, there is not that culture like in Philly of like an Italian Hero or places in Jersey. Like there's not, I don't know if there is it. I mean, well, I guess the one thing you have are deli sandwiches, like corned beef and pastrami.
We have like DeFonte's, but
DeFonte's, I don't
Roll
know.
And Roaster, if you want to go all the way up there.
But in terms of like,
it's a different thing.
It's not like like pizza is New York's thing. You know what I mean? What the heritage of the city is about. Like, it's not a sandwich.
Right. And
city.
So then at that point, too, then there were these people who were like, no, we were going to open like a fancy sandwich shop. And so then you end up with these places where it's like,
Do you want to name names?
Witchcraft opened.
Okay.
And it's like a theme park. You know, it's like, well, this is a French sandwich. So we're going to use Gruyere and there's apples on it and it's on brioche. And this one is like an Indian inspired sandwich. So it's curried and it's like on papadum or whatever. You know, it's like, it was like, it's super theme park and goofy.
Well, it gets back to your point about you don't want it to label whether a sandwich is vegetarian or not.
And that is weirdly still a thing to this day. You know, it's like now you can get pastrami ramen and a like Reuben pizza or whatever. You know, like people still do this kind of theme parky goofy stuff, but it was like super strong in the sandwich world, it felt like. So I was like, no, let's, I know what we're going to do. We're going to open a sandwich shop where we still do weird stuff, but it is just, it's a sandwich, so it's always the same roll, and it's got different things in it, because this is my, this is my blank canvas, and I will paint beautiful things in it.
All right, let's argue about some stuff. We're going to give you our lightning round before we send you on your way.
Okay.
Although now I feel like I should redo all of these, because like I feel like, I don't know.
I'm just going to say I don't like it.
I'm wondering if they're too straight ahead. Hellman's or Duke's?
I've never had Duke's, so I'm going to go with Hellman's. Sorry.
I knew I was going to do this wrong.
I bet it tastes like mayo, though. That's my guess.
It tastes very mayo-y, yes. Crosscut or diagonal?
I'm a crosscut kind of guy.
Really? I thought it was scientifically proven that if you cut a sandwich on the diagonal, it tastes better because you can start going in on the pointy part.
I don't believe in science.
Breast or thigh?
I love them both so much. I don't know that I have to pick one. I have to pick one?
Yeah, because you said you profess your love for chicken.
I mean, I'll champion the breast, I suppose, because I do love the breast.
How do you usually, do you fry it? Like, if you're going to make a sandwich with chicken, are you like a fried guy, a braised guy, shredded sort of thing?
Yeah, I like it. I guess I like it probably just roasted and sliced or shredded.
Okay, all right. This is going to be a tough one. Broccoli or cauliflower?
Broccoli, but I love... cauliflower.
Dill or bread and butter?
Dill.
Crunchy or creamy?
Crunchy or creamy? Can I say neither and that I would go soggy over both of those? I like soggy things.
No, I was talking peanut butter.
Okay, fine. Crunchy.
Yeah, extra crunchy. At the restaurant, do you guys do you buy the good for you sort of organic peanut butter, or do you like Jif or something? Like what makes sense? Do you ever use it?
If we're serving it, I mean, we haven't bought peanut butter in a long time, but we buy like Jif.
Dijon or yellow?
Just straight up on a sandwich, I guess I would say yellow to cook with Dijon.
Really? I don't get yellow mustard.
I like yellow mustard.
Really?
But again, like I like them both. And if I'm like making a vinaigrette, I'm going to use Dijon. I'm not going to put yellow. I mean, unless that's all I got around, that's fine too, but I don't know. I like all mustard.
Okay. This is, I don't know what, I don't understand any of these questions, but Emil Stonick, one of our editors who went to Oberlin, your alma mater.
Yeah, but he graduated so recently. I know. If it counts.
He's a youngster. He asked, Tank or Harkness?
Tank.
What is that?
It's a, it's the, Oberlin has a, as a student, you can live in the dorms and eventually you can move off campus, but there's also this like in between, which is like a hippie fraternity kind of thing, which they're co-ops. And I lived in Tank for a year and it was great. But that you like, there's a lottery to get in and you cook for yourself, you clean for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea what this one is. SCO or the Fev? The Fev? The Fev? I don't know.
The Fev.
The Fev.
I'm going to say the SCO because I worked there and I liked it. But they're both, the one is on campus. It's like the student union has this weird club. I saw Blink 182 play there once. Wow. It was really
That's
weird.
Awesome.
And the Fev is like the cool kids restaurant where like all the cool kids worked. I feel like I'm gonna get in trouble for not saying the Fev actually.
I don't know.
They're both great.
Is that the full name of both or are those the abbreviated names?
The SCO I think is short for the disco.
Okay.
And the Fev I think that's the full name.
Wow, you crazy Oberlin kids.
They had this great chicken and avocado situation that was so good.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, final question. And we're not doing butter or olive oil just because you're a sandwich guy. But Jerry Maguire or A Few Good Men?
Jerry Maguire. It's a beautiful movie.
It is. Tyler Cord, thank you very much for coming by.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. And I'm sorry that I don't like the right things.
This podcast has been brought to you by Belle Cushing and Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli and additional help from Christina Che and Lily Sherman. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us anything about this or any episode, please email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com.